Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
So welcome all. It's very funny to be standing here with a PowerPoint in these chairs. This is the room I give our group in. And my first entry into the room is always moving the chairs out of the way. I'll try to get used to this lecture format, and also say that if you're open to doing some movement during or after I talk, we will. But I know that the thing was advertised as a luncheon lecture, so I whatever the expectations are, we'll go along with. But before I get started, I'd sort of like to know, I've talked to a couple of people who've come in today, but just to sort of get a sense of who you are, how many here have had cancer or have been dealing with cancer? Yes. And how many work with people who have cancer? Okay. And how many know somebody, either a family member or a friend, or close person who has dealt with cancer? Okay. And how many have been inspired in some way by how someone has dealt with cancer? Yeah. So we've all been touched. And just feel for a moment your feeling response to that experience. And if you can, feel it in your body. You know, because feelings are in our body. And as you feel it, give it a movement of any kind, of your own. It can be small, it can be nuanced, it can be as slight as a change of facial expression. But to feel it in a way that actually moves you, okay? And this is really the basis of dance therapy, of movement work, that we use what we feel and we use our body's possibilities to express, both as a way to know what's going on and also as a way to transform it. So this group, Healing Through Dance, can you see with the lights on? And I don't know how that works with the filming. Can't see? Maybe we should vary the lights a little bit. Yeah. A little bit better? Yeah. I went through all this trouble. I might as well be able to see it. So we started this group when the Cancer Resource Center came into being in the mid-90s. And at the time, I was working at UCSF and actually on the pediatric rehab unit, and was asked to sort of formulate part of the lifestyle program. And the group came into being, and it's gone on consistently since then as part of the Cancer Resource Center. And it's open to everyone who has experienced cancer, all diagnoses, all stages, and it's free to the public, and all hospitals too. It's not just UCSF patients who are able to come. So the point of view of healing, and I call it healing through dance, and it's a big word, healing. So really, my perspective on healing is that it's a very individual process. It's a personal process. And it relies a lot on integrating many different levels and aspects of experience, from the deepest spiritual and personal levels to the very mundane and practical everyday decisions that people have to make. And so we travel through all of those levels, and I very much believe that each person's own way of conceptualizing their healing process is the most powerful input that can be given to the process. And learning how to do that is one of the things we work on in this group. So what we do, you know, in movement and in dance, it's all about in your totality. Through expression and creativity, we make meaning and we also discover meaning. Through the bodily work that we do, we really kind of work on possibilities of the body, possibilities that people never even knew they had, and maybe feared, you know, as well, that they couldn't do. And also this piece about rest and relaxation, really learning how to self-regulate, how to rest, how to stop, and how to pay attention to what's needed at any given moment. And along with that, you know, the stressors of dealing with cancer and directives and have-tos, all of that. This is a place, really, when people come in this room, we hang that on the door, you know, and this is a space just for what is needed by the people who come here. So the actual content of the group work, I pay a lot of attention to what people need and what they're here for. Why dance and healing in a hospital? Well, it's the most ancient form of healing, and I think the earliest ways of dance were all about, you know, managing critical times of life, the stages and phases of life, and healing itself was done in community and often in forms that actually used your body in an active way, not just a passive way. And so forms of dance, you know, certainly have evolved from there, but healing has come back into dance in this century, springing out of innovations in modern dance in the turn of the century, Isadora, et cetera, the modern dancers that came up in the 30s and the 40s. My teacher, my mentor, Blanche Evan, was a dancer, creative dancer, and became one of the pioneers in the field of dance therapy. There are many pioneers, and probably somewhere between 5 and 10 are thought of. And so dance therapy really emerged 40s, 50s, and came into its own in the 1960s as a field. And since then has you know, gone on to develop. So I'm going to talk some about Blanche Evan specifically, just to sort of give you a view on the way of working. She was one of the pioneers that worked with sort of normal, she called it the normal neurotic adult, not institutionalized psychiatric patients, but people like us, right, who wanted to be able to connect more with what's really going on and deal with problems in a way that also could use creativity and dance. And so the idea is integrating dance as an art with psychotherapy as both a practice and an art, so that they're actually one form. It's not first you dance and then you do therapy. Actually, they happen simultaneously. And the three branches, say, creative dance, dance therapy, and functional technique, which I will talk about, creative dance is really an art. And it's for what people use art for, self-expression, their own artistic objectives, and ways of getting outlet and release and enjoying just the pleasure and joy of dancing. Dance therapy is, as I said earlier, an integration with psychotherapy and dance, and it really does confront problems. You really work on difficulties in life and growth, and both accessing deep levels of experience but also being able to reflect in ways that can help you deal with life and change. And functional technique is an approach to working on the body. Blanche Evan created this in her work, and it's a non-stylistic technique You could use it to become a dancer, but people really, it's just a way of really basically learning your body. We don't get this education as part of our, just everyday education, what actually our body is and how to use it and how to really work on aspects that need strengthening or mobility, resiliency, and also accepting the limits that we have, because, and this is a big part of our group often, is knowing what your limits are can free you so much, right? It's very hard to accept. But once we can get to that, boy, there's so many possibilities that open up. And in dance, maybe it's very obvious that we can express what words can't, but what that actually means is that processing goes on nonverbally, and it has from birth. We've all, we didn't start talking when we were born. We learned how to use words, and with that are developmental aspects of, on a really neurobiological level, of symbolic thinking and ways of kind of conceptualizing and in some ways categorizing different kinds of experience. Well, there's some kinds of experience that have nothing to do with that and that really actually get felt and experienced in different parts of the brain that aren't processing language. Trauma is one, and a lot of work is going on in the field of trauma, understanding better why it is that people dissociate or disconnect when something happens that's outside the realm of what can be tolerated, right? And so when we dance, we can sort of find ways in and also out to be able to articulate using what nature gave us, what everybody has always had, our bodies. It's nothing new. What's new, really, is the openness and the desire to open up in this way. And facilities that we learn in a class like this. So the aspect of the group and the social connection and the group support is really a piece that I've brought into this, kind of using the work and the knowledge that's been accumulated about the importance of support in dealing with cancer, psychosocial support. So it's not talking about that happens here, but it's experiencing, sharing, and in some way being together. And so this concept of psychophysical unity, which is basic to dance therapy, I believe it's basic to all the mind-body approaches. The language may be different. What is meant by this is really that there is a simultaneous experience of psyche, body, spirit, emotion, life experience. It happens. What you pay attention to and what's really salient for you might be on one level or another. And if you have a pain in your shoulder, you're going to be feeling your body. If you're sad about something, you might be feeling emotion. But, in our work, we connect them. We bring things, we actually link them. We map them. We find ways to make holes out of parts and to really repair some of the, Blanche, I would call the broken walls of body, mind, and spirit. We repair that. And so you can enter it in many ways, through sensation or through imagination, imagery. You can enter it through a thought that comes up. You can enter it just through a movement, a physicality. Many, many ways to get in. And when I say the body maps, I often feel when you know how to work with your body in a very personal way, you actually can track things and move it so that you do feel that there's some kind of it's not a visual map necessarily, although I guess it could be if you drew it. It has a kinesthetic feel to it, but you kind of get a sense of what's really going on in different ways, and even when there are conflicts, that becomes part of the picture. I don't know how much you can read here. This is something of Blanche Evans, where she kind of drew, she called it spiraling roads to objectives in dance therapy, some of which are insight through body channels, outlet, postural realignment, and this is all, posture is not against a ideal of you should be this, you should be that. It's more like, how is my posture? What is my posture? How did it get that way? You know, how does it serve me? How can I evolve from there? From destructive to functional tension, that we are able to use our intensities, rhythmized time, both a way of experiencing time subjectively, but also in ways that we can, feel in harmony with time, space, restoring tone, and the acceptance of physical components of feeling, which is really what got developed so much in dance therapy. So in my own work in developing this group and also understanding what people have been learning about the usefulness of psychosocial interventions and what kinds of interventions make sense for people, you know. We've seen, well, here I think probably Mount Zion is one of the leaders of psychosocial work in cancer, developing many routes of support and psychotherapy for people. I've often, you know, in my work with people who have other kinds of chronic illnesses, I sort of feel like they don't have what the cancer community has created, and to some extent perhaps the AIDS community has created, of in terms of models of support. There are some models for people who have other chronic diseases, but it doesn't somehow seem as accessible. Approaches like we have at this program at the Cancer Resource Center, whole person approaches. And so in the literature, you know, there's a body of work about how expression helps, how there's interaction between many aspects of life and psychoneuroimmunology. Social support is good, expression of feelings, and, you know, Spiegel's landmark study that group therapy actually affects health. And in the dance therapy literature, there's actually less literature. It's not a big research community. But I did a study with Jamie Pennebaker on positive health effects of dance and writing, really words and movement. And then we have a few studies and writings of others who have been in the field and leading the field. And I know Jamie is here from Anna Halperin's work. She's been a very important person in this work. So what we learn is that self-expression is good. It helps people. Not only helps you feel better, but actually might help you get better. And better might even change in terms of what we think of as better. You know, our concept of what we're aiming for might change. It's good to connect with others. And I think to not just develop resources, but discover the resources that have always been there, because it's in crisis that we really find out what we can be. We're forced to. We don't pick it. We don't want to pick it, but we have to. And that's really where so much comes through for people. People that have influenced my work, I think to be able to articulate what the issues are and creatively approach them, you know, that actually the experience of illness changes us, just like loss changes us. You can't avoid it. Life changes us, and at some point in life, we approach something that we never thought we could deal with, and It's part of being human, and it's part of what we, I think, learn to accept as part of being human, face as part of being human, and grow with. So the aspects of cancer illness that catalyze growth and engagement with life is something that we really put energy into here. I've talked about personal resources already, and I think that in dance work, particularly accessing depth, which I think of really as that essential quality, the essential qualities within that are always there, but that we don't always make contact with. How to use the body as a source of pleasure, even when you're feeling pain, and also possibility. And all of it is about regenerating this. So creating meaning and I would say purpose is something that comes out in the group, not as a, you know, enforced quality, but it really, whenever you ask the question, you know, what did I just do? And why did I do that? Because in dance, things come out spontaneously, and you don't think it first, and it happens. And then your attention is brought to something, and you wonder, what does it mean? Why did it happen? Because it's there for a reason. And so we have this kind of generative meaning process going on that, again, there's more and more work going on in the field of psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, about meaning making, and actually in our earliest stages of development, meaning making happens in relationship and happens in how we interact with other people, and it reflects how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about others. And so it's always going on, but in a time and a space where you have that possibility, it becomes pretty amazing what people actually dance and what comes out in a group. So all of this helps to counteract, I think, some of the frightening aspects of dealing with change and loss. And, you know, the piece about if it can also boost the immune system, that's great. Let's do it, you know. And I think that when people choose a group like this in as a complement to medical treatment, they're choosing it for a reason. They feel that it's got an importance to it. And so, you know, I think that's back to the individualized healing approach that I try to really encourage people to follow through on. Okay, just a little bit about Blanche Evan as a pioneer, creative dance for children. She developed methods to help people express themselves, but also target the issues, the content that was meaningful and important at a given time. So the children would not be dancing like fairies, you know. They'd be actually dancing about their lives and relationships. And she went on to develop this with adults in dance therapy. In a dance therapy process, you know, typically it's done in a one-to-one way. There are groups, and this is a group, and it doesn't focus here. We don't focus specifically on individual therapy, although there is an openness to whatever people bring. So if it's needed, it's done. There's a lot of creative dance going on here because people really need that and want that. But when needed, and I think particularly in terms of, you know, the people that come who've had, especially the older generation who, when they begin, you know, they begin to move their hips and they begin to move their spines, and it's like, it's sort of like these spines and ropes are just coming off their bodies. And, you know, the capacity to actually free up that way is quite liberating. And so working with the kinds of bodily trauma and assault that people who have just had surgery or are dealing with various kinds of treatments or feeling nauseous, etc., we really take into account the impact of this, right? And often it means modulating more. It might mean addressing feelings about the body that have changed. But it also might mean broadening the picture, because nobody is just a cancer patient, right? So there's so much more there. And so, you know, often we expand the picture quite a lot, and that as we integrate the different aspects of what health, the term psychosomatic health really is, that there are many different levels of what can help you feel healthy, and help you be healthy, and help you regain a sense of life going on. Nobody knows what the end point is for any of us. And so we are constantly, you know, I think, battling the fear of what might happen with the possibility of being exactly where we are, and you know, maximizing our engagement. So, you know, we work with lots of different things here. Experiences are put into movement. If someone has an image, it's moved. Then words are said. Those words are brought back into movement. There's a constant interplay between what's danced, what's expressed, what's shared, what's danced. And that's where the group support, I think, also is very helpful, because people's experiences are quite different, but they're well understood by each other. So I think I've talked about that meaning already. So I will say that one of the things about dance, I think, that is quite you know, marvelous and unique, is that being in the present means your body, what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're feeling are all happening simultaneously. So, you know, we could sit in a chair and think about something, but we're not doing that thing. Or we can feel very powerfully and also be, you know, thinking about what we're feeling. But if we're not moving it, we're not, you know, our bodies are not engaged. In dance, we're really moving it. So it really has a, there's something about experiencing things in a very present way. And it doesn't mean that the past or the future are not part of the experience, because often they are. Memories come up, or associations, or planning, you know, different things. But the goal here is to connect them all, that they're not fighting each other, that thinking about the future is not disturbing the sense of what I'm in the present for, or what happened yesterday, or that the past is not collapsing the future or the present, you know. That actually there's a continuum going on, and that's part of being human. When people come into the group, I would say most people have not danced before. Some have. Some have taken dance classes of different kinds. But I would say on the whole, people are new to dance. And frequently they've really wanted to dance for a while, you know. I'll put this back a second. And so they get oriented to what it's like to be in movement and action. We do a kind of a warm-up, which is, I think of it as a self-regulating, self-directed warm-up, where you can begin somewhere. I give a theme and direct it somewhat, but it's really very much about feeling their own sensation and feeling their own movement and working with that in a productive way. When there's pain and limitations, we're dealing with fear and we're dealing with hesitation. And I really encourage people to pay attention to that and not ignore it, not ignore their fear or their pain, because it's there for a reason and it's there to be understood and to be approached. So one of the ways I think of it is being careful in our English language often has a fear association component to it. So I kind of reframe it to being full of care, taking care of yourself, understanding why it is that you have to move a little more slowly here or pay attention to that knee or whatever it is. And it really kind of helps people to feel more comfortable about the situation that they're actually in, instead of, I shouldn't be feeling this way, there's something wrong with me, I should be doing this instead of that, And we try to get rid of those kinds of directives and just let yourself be where you are and start with that. And to, respect the mistrust of the body that comes up with illness. I mean, again, it's getting rid of whatever about the self-judgments impede the capacity to trust what's actually going on with you and find that. So I've talked about the careful here and ways of working with losses and limits that again, allow possibilities. Allow the possibility of approaching grief. Allow the possibility of accepting limits. Aging is one piece of it, too, for people. And wanting always to feel like you could do things that you could do when you were younger, or you were healthier, or you were this, or you were that. And in fact, it's amazing what people find that they can do that they never could do when they were younger or this or that, or because they're actually working with what they have, right? And that is a skill to learn, and that's what I try to help people access. When we are dealing with mortality and feelings that are very, very powerful about dying, or maybe we've lost somebody else. Again, these are feelings that can be dealt with in a way that is very human and constructive, and that's really what we try to do. We've lost a few people who have come to our group, and it's, I think, always remembered, and we work very, I think, sensitively on whatever people are, wherever people are. So the crash course, a concept, if you have to learn about your body today and you've never learned anything about it before, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. And I do think, there's another way to think about that, which is that we learn about things when we need them, we accumulate the knowledge we need on our own pathway. But often, I think, knowledge about the body is very... There's a poverty, really, a poverty of knowledge about the body in our culture. I mean, physical education classes for children teach nothing about the body. it's wild. But still, we have this possibility here to learn about our bodies and in that process become our own experts. And so with so much input advice, medical directives, classes, courses, you know, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. In this work, you know, I try to encourage people to use their own wisdom, become their own experts, but integrate the knowledge and discard the things that don't make sense for them. And in terms of actually what their body is, it can be a very specific thing, like where, you know, I've had people come in who have had, you know, major abdominal surgery, and they really, the word abdomen, they don't know what it is. I mean, they know it has something to do with this, but there's really no, I don't mean like on a anatomy poster, I mean in their own, in your own body, to feel your abdomen and really be able to, you know, use your belly in any, you know, either to hold yourself up or to let yourself down or whatever it is you're using it for. And I think this kind of discovery is, you know, it's so basic, it's so powerful, because there's really a way of empowering yourself to have a body of your own, right? And not just, oh, I should be this or I'm not that. So these are the kinds of resources we really work on, and it allows, I think, as you go, more of a tolerance of feeling, emotion, and feeling even physical discomforts that come up, because once you move your body, you feel much more. The moment you start moving, there's a lot more sensation. Circulation happens, just yeah, joints are moving, muscles are moving, everything's going, the nervous system's enlivening, and boy, you start feeling stuff. And it, you know, it may hurt, it may feel this, it may feel that, and actually making sense out of that is what we do quite a bit here. So working with pain, it comes up, I would say, every week. One of the ways that that we work with pain is actually interpreting it, not up here, but, you know, there are many different, pain is like a big garbage pail, you know, it has one word in our language. Maybe you have a 1 to 10 scale. We really try to make it more like a rainbow, you know, lots of different sensations involved in pain, some of which are actually important, you know, like it's a signal that tells you what's going on. What's going on? How do you know what's going on? And I think that's one of the real skill sets that nobody else can tell you. You know, you can get your diagnosis, you can get your medication, but to figure out what was that, you know, and how can I address it, and how does it fit with the diagnosis and the medication and the this and the that, you know, and that's really the individualized process that I'm sort of speaking to here, of addressing and some making sense out of what you're really feeling. And it helps a lot in pain management, because we, you know, you find that there are ways that movement can alleviate chronic pain. It's completely the opposite than what actually is intuitive, that you shouldn't be moving if you have pain, or that you should protect it and hold it down. And actually, you know, nobody's forced to do anything, and I'm very careful about encouraging people to be gentle and not create pain. The opposite of no pain, no gain. but to approach it in a way that makes sense for them. And I would say almost always people walk out of here with less pain than they walk in with. And it's because the body needs to move, and it needs to move in healthful ways. And when you create your own movement in a intelligent way, it's your own medicine. That's your movement medicine. And you're doing it only the way that you could create, because I could never say you should do this movement or you should do that movement and that will alleviate your pain, because I'm not you, I don't know your body, I don't have that map, right? I can make suggestions about ways of movement that can help you discover it. And that's one of the ways we work with pain, and along with the rehabilitative work. So as that goes on, we then work on expression of associated emotions and rehabilitation. And this word physicalization, okay, so it's a way of putting into movement the internal world, your emotions, your thoughts, your feelings, physical experiences, life situations, imagery. And it's akin to visualization, except in visualization, I think mostly it's done with eyes closed thinking. And physicalization comes through the body, and it's connected with thinking and feeling, but it really gets moved. So if you have a healing image, you dance it. You know, you can also talk it, you can visualize it, you can draw it, you can play it on a drum, but it's all part of bringing in the expressive component of the body. So in this kind of expression, lots of connections are made, and we do take it into life so that people can walk out of here often and use what we do and use the group support in a way. You know, I think connections are made here that are quite real. And that hopefully will help them, not just on healing cancer, but on living more the way they want to live. Okay, so that's the lecture part of my talk. I want to ask you, I mean, we can have time for questions and answers, but would you like to do any movement? Would you? Yeah? Good. All right. What I'd like to do then is just have you, and it's up to you. You can stay seated or you can stand. It's really up to you. Because movement can happen anywhere and in any way. And what I'm going to do is just give you a little sample of a kind of a warm-up that that we might do and a way it might evolve. And, you know, I'm mindful of the time, so it's going to be very short. Okay, because I know we're up till 1 o'clock today. So, just, and you can move chairs back or forward or whatever. So, let's just begin by, you know what it's like to get a really nice massage? Yeah? Okay, so we're going to start with, like, massaging yourself with movement. So, from the inside out, wherever it is in your body, really needs, if you think of it as touch, if you think of it you know, your muscles getting some kind of innervation, if you think of it as release, just to move your body, and you begin wherever it is you feel in your body. And again, let your body be a map. So if you start and you feel your arms, your upper body is getting a mobilizing, gentle massage, just moving these different areas, and then let it go to the next place and connect it up. So if your arms, your shoulders, especially if there's discomfort, you might want to give it a little gentle way to relieve or release. That's it. You can use, I think, breath in your own way to help that release. And let it travel to wherever it needs to go. It can go upper body, mid body, lower, even in your shoes and your feet, your face. That's it. Get a good massage. And your joints can be movable. Mm-hmm. That's it. And as you move, you'll feel more your body, the front, the back, the sides, and the areas that you began with that felt like they needed something more, what's underneath them, what's above, what's in front and what's in back. That's it. So we might go on with this for a while in a group, but actually right now just see if you can use your body as it's moving to just open areas now that need to be opened, whatever that means to you. Just using a little more. Whatever the range is that's right for you, be gentle with what you have, but feel that you can use your whole body to open and come back to whatever your baseline is, so that you find a limit, you work within it, and then you come back to where you are. And each time you open, try a different place to open, so that you might feel maybe it's your upper body, maybe it's your pelvis, maybe it's your belly. Just try to open different areas as you go. Mm-hmm. Might open your hands, might open your face. Just try different places. And as you open, you may feel again more vitality in your body. You might want to shake it a little bit. Feel ways of coming alive here in your body. You find there might be a natural kind of speed or rhythm. You may be going slowly. You may find there's a area of your body that needs to move more quickly. So see if you can just follow whatever the inclination toward timing or rhythm is here, so you can change what needs to be changed to make it satisfying. Make it feel like, this is what I need to do right now, and I'm going to do it. And you can, as you get your body active here, we have some rhythm, we have different ways of using the areas, big or small, some with more intensity, some with less. Again, time moving us along here. I want to just focus for a minute on two areas of the body, and those would be our hands and our hearts. And just do your own improvisation, just for a minute, on using your hands and heart together, whatever that means to you. Okay. And we'll before you finish your movement, let yourself know what this is about. And if you want to, you can even title it or give it a name or a word. You can give it a word if there is one. Maybe there isn't one. Let yourself know what you just did. We're going to come back now. I think everybody here is a dancer. Does anybody want to say anything about what you did?
I took a NIA class, just two NIA classes at a Newlands dance for it.
It's
supposed to bring out emotion.
Yeah.
And at the end of the session, they had us kind of rolling around on the floor, and ever since those classes, this is what I do first thing in the morning while I'm still in bed, is just kind of move around. It's just a nice, easy way to wake up and get kinks out. Aging.
I'm aging, yeah. It's good to be moving. Is there anything else?
Those moving with my hands and my heart and really woke me up to the day. It's kind of interesting. It's sort of a wake-up for me in right here in this moment.
Yeah.
I love being in the moment because of the associations I have with both hand and heart. And one phrase that I just love is your hand is your extension of your heart. Mm-hmm. And I just brought that into a moment. So I felt like I really touched myself and opened myself more.
Others as well.
Thank you.
When you have your classes, do you have them sometimes where people are just kind of doing one thing, or do you incorporate different types of music or meditation?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, music is very much a part of this work. I didn't mention that.
So what types of music?
All kinds of music. I have music from around the world. I have classical. I have jazz. I have new age music. Every kind of music. It's interesting. Typically in dance therapy, music is not used because it's very directive, and often it's like a part. The way I describe it to people in the group, it's like a partner. You have to dance with it, not to it, right? But I find when in this work, people really need music and they want music. And I think that's in part the infusion of the inspiration of music and the connection to something larger outside. So we use a lot of music, yeah. And I pick it very carefully. Yeah, and I pick it very carefully. I'm not always right, in how I pick it, but because it's recorded music. Sometimes I play music on drum or percussion. But, I think there's a real desire for music. People request it, and I pay attention to that. I think it's there for a reason, It's really there for a reason. So meditation... not in the conventional sense, no. I think they're here to move. They're here to move their bodies. They're here to dance and not to sort of sit and meditate. They can go other places for that and sometimes do.
But, how did you, at the end, I guess you would say kind of at the beginning, would you do a check-in and then check-out?
Somewhat, but it's this constant check. It's not just beginning and end. There's always a way of allowing and asking for what's going on, but there's no one format I will say that to you. We don't always start the same way. We don't end the same way. It's sometimes hard for people to get used to that there isn't one format. You know, we don't always start in a circle, that sort of thing. But I do think, there's a check-in. It's not a formal check-in because anything you do the same each time becomes, it's like old clothing. You know, you just try to do what's happening. And pay attention to where people are at. So there is the kind of meditation would be really in the movement that you're focusing on what you're doing, and you're attentive to it, and your awareness happens. But it's very different than sitting and meditating or lying down. Sometimes people do actually; they will sit and lie down and meditate or whatever, and that's wonderful. You know, to just be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. You know, so I think that's part of the skill set too, is not feeling you have to be doing what other people are doing or what the teacher, you know, has. She says to do this, so I have to do that. No, it's let's find the way that's exactly right for now, for this moment. That would be the best thing. I would say 5. Yeah. It's a small group. And people find their way here who want to do it. And, you know, sometimes we have more and sometimes we have less, but that's the average number. Yeah. Okay. I could be available for a couple minutes. Sure. Okay. Well, thank you all. Thanks for coming. Yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.